Chapter 1. Sharkey. As I wandered along the shore of Isla Morada that July morning in 1935, I didn't notice that I had reached the mangroves and sheltering sea-grape trees of the cove where old Sharkey lived. I was so intent on watching a manatee glide through the calm water that before I realized it, I was on the stretch of beach near Sharkey's place. I was about to make a hasty exit when I saw a clearly defined row of turtle tracks in the sand and heard a familiar scratching noise. My gaze followed the tracks to the place where the sandy beach abutted the jungle-like foliage, and there I saw a huge raccoon eagerly digging, tossing the sand aside with his claws. He was after turtle eggs. "Scram! Get away from there!" I yelled, waving my arms and racing toward the raccoon. The animal hesitated, then turned and lumbered off into the brush. I bent down and smoothed the sand over the nest. "Hey, you, Jake Pitney, leave that nest alone!" I looked up, and there was Sharkey, hobbling toward me and gesturing with his cane, a knotted stick of mahogany. His face was as red as a boiled crayfish. Instinctively, I put my arms up in front of me. "I wouldn't hurt the nest. I was just chasing a raccoon away from the eggs." Sharkey glanced toward the nearby mangroves. "He'll be back. I've been trying to get rid of that robber for a long time. I tell you, between the coons and the cannery, there won't be a sea turtle left in a few years," he complained. I stood there feeling guilty, not knowing what to say. At the lunch counter in our family's general store, we served turtle soup from the cannery. "I've got a panther prowling around here, too. See those tracks?" He pointed to another set of prints in the damp earth beneath the trees. I had to look closely to make them out in the mud. "Could those be a dog's?" I asked. "There's no dog around here that size," Sharkey snorted. "Besides, if they were dog tracks, there'd be claws showing in the tracks. Cats have retractable claws. I've heard the panther caterwauling at night. He'll probably go after the eggs, too. This is the second nest that turtle's laid since the coon ransacked the last one." Sharkey looked around and pointed with his cane at a broken-down rowboat. "Give me a hand with that old tub. I sure can't stand around here day and night guarding that nest." I wanted to get out of there, so I quickly grabbed the bow end while he took the stern, and we turned the boat upside down over the turtle nest. "That should protect it for now. But when the hatchlings head for the water, the gulls will probably swoop down and grab them anyways. It's a losing battle." He sat on the boat and glowered at me from under his bushy eyebrows. That was my signal to leave. I knew firsthand how Sharkey yelled and chased kids off his property with his cane, and I wasn't going to stick around to see it at night, or to see it again. I began to back away toward the path to town. "Hey, wait just one darn minute," Sharkey ordered. I stopped dead still as he opened up a pocket knife. "What do you do in your spare time?"
I fish a lot," I stammered.
Sharkey reached into his shirt pocket, pulled out a small piece of wood, and began whittling. "I need someone to help me out with work," he went on, "like caulking my boats and throwing some paint on my house." He gestured behind us with his thumb. I glanced back and could see the roof of his place through the brush. Sharkey's home was an old boxcar that had been abandoned years ago, while Sharkey was working on the Overseas Railroad from Miami to Key West. The story goes that when the railroad was finished, the boxcar was forgotten, tucked away in the brush. So Sharkey just helped himself to it and moved on in. Folks said Sharkey had some money from his veteran's pension and could probably afford a bungalow somewhere, but he seemed content in his freight car. The boxcar wasn't much to look at, but it sheltered Sharkey from the crosswinds that blew from the Atlantic on one side of and Florida Bay on the other. Where it was rusted, Sharkey had slapped on a few coats of leftover paint he got from our general store. It was smeared with bright yellow and red and a few streaks of blue here and there. We must have had a sale on one color because most of the car was now a sickening pickle green. One good thing about that shade
was that it blended in under the big round leaves of the sea grape trees. It was strange. Although we kids were scared of Sharky, the grown-ups around town all liked and respected him. Even my dad. I remember how he stood up for Sharky when our neighbor, Mr. Ashburn, complained about his ugly old freight car. Dad had reasoned, "Hey, Sharky worked hard for years putting that railroad through. If it weren't for guys like him, that overseas railway from Miami to Key West would never have been built. Since no one from the railroad ever claimed that boxcar, why shouldn't Sharky put it to some use?" Sharky blew the dust from a piece of wood he was whittling. "I was hunting gators in the Glades last week, but I came back early to nurse my leg along." I'd always wondered what was wrong with Sharky's leg. He had been a wrecker, so I thought he might have been hurt diving down into sunken ships to retrieve merchandise. Dad said he was wounded in the Great War, while some of the other kids said Sharky had been a pirate and was injured in a fight. We pictured him in his earlier days with a patch over one eye, brandishing a sword. More reason to believe he was a pirate than gold coin. More reason to believe he was a pirate was that gold coin necklace he always wore. Tough guys like Sharky didn't wear necklaces, so we were pretty sure it was part of his pirate stash. When I mentioned it to Mom, she said it was probably a religious medal. But Sharky didn't seem like the religious type. We couldn't get a good look at it, but we'd seen it glitter on his hairy chest, and it looked like real gold. Sharky shifted his leg, and I could see he was in pain. "Dang leg! I need to be able to fish by fall when the rich guys come back," he said. "Those millionaires tip well when they have a good fishing catch." Sharky worked as a guide for the Millionaires Club, a resort on the ocean side of our town, Isla Mirada. He was a popular guide because he knew where the bonefish, or tarpon, would be running. I was still wondering if Sharky wanted me to work for him, when he finally came right out and said, "Anyway, I could use a hand with my gator hides." He wiped the small sculpture in his hand with a handkerchief, and I could now see that it was a first-rate likeness of an alligator. "I need someone to go to Key West on the train with me tomorrow." "Are you offering me a job?" "Of course I am. What do you think I'm talking about here?" "You said you needed someone. You didn't say who," I retorted. Sharky shook his head. "Well, I meant you." I wondered if he would pay me. Then, as if reading my mind, Sharky said, "I'll pay you as soon as I sell the hides. It won't be a lot, but I would think a kid like you could use some spare change. So what's your answer?" he demanded. "Are you taking the job or not?" Did I really want to go to Key West with someone as cantankerous as Sharky? "I need to ask my folks. I'll go over to the store later today and talk to your dad." "Okay," I said, still in shock. A trip to Key West with Sharky might be a real adventure. Why not? I raced back along the overgrown path and onto the dirt road, leaving Sharky standing by the beach watching me. "Wait until the other Isla Mirada kids hear this," I thought as I made a beeline toward town. "They'll never believe that I'm going to Key West with old Sharky himself."